Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Wednesday night for your Thursday delivery. Fun show ahead. Another couple of guests and some good ones too. UFC flyweight Brandon Moreno will join us so we can talk about his preparations for that title defense against Davison Figueiredo. Although we may just ask him questions outside the old house camp, Ben, how's your weight? Blah, blah, blah. Really excited for that fight. It's a 1-2 punch for UFC 270. That includes the Moreno fight, the Moreno title defense, as well as Francis Ngannou, who's going to unify his undisputed title against Ciryl Gane, who's the interim champ in the heavyweight division. They're the main event that same night, and Goes and I will be hosting a watch-along here on MMA Junkie, along with our partners at Tipico and Panda. Just like last time, where you guys killed it and you guys came out strong, we're doing another one, and it's all set for January 22nd, so tell your friends. We're also going to talk to Andrew Simon, the president and CEO of the Fremont Street Experience, formerly the president and CEO of Access TV, which used to be HDNet Fights. He had a long history in MMA, and now he's involved downtown here in Las Vegas. And guess what? Our good friend is going to be on Undercover Boss on Friday, the Emmy Award-winning show that airs Friday nights at 8 p.m. So we'll ask him about that, see if he misses MMA, and see if he can bring those two worlds together as well as covering some of the latest news, some big news topics out there. We'll be right back. MMA Junkie Radio, again, on a Wednesday night for Thursday delivery. It's January 13th. It was about 24 hours. We got the answer to a question that had been lingering since late last week when we found out Max Holloway would not be able to challenge Alexander Volkanovski at UFC 272. Now we found out that it's going to be Alexander Volkanovski against the Korean Zombie, except 1 month later at UFC 273 in Brooklyn, New York. It's part of a 1-2 punch, the same 1-2 punch that they were going to do in March here in Las Vegas. They're moving it to Brooklyn. Again, it's the Korean Zombie challenging Alexander Volkanovski for his featherweight title. And we also have Aljamain Sterling, his fight versus Peter Yan also got moved to UFC 273, April 9th, our mom's birthday. So now, of course, the question remains, well, what's happening with UFC 272? I was flying to Vegas on March 5th. I wanted to catch a couple title fights. Guess what you get to watch? Colby Covington against Jorge Masvidal. Lots to react to, Goes. First, start off with the Korean Zombie. You feeling it?
No. I'll be blunt about this one. It's going to be a good fight. You know, it's going to be interesting, but I feel like a ball was dropped here. When it's all said and done, it could be the right decision, but I just don't understand why you don't wait just to see what happens with Giga and possibly make that fight. Like, you know, a lot of people say that Giga is not really marketable or whatever. Dude, I think this guy's great. I think they're dropping the ball, kind of like they did with Jorge Masvidal a little bit. This guy is a good person. He can talk smack, but still be sort of respectful. And he's entertaining as hell. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't wait and just see. Man, wouldn't it be nice to get a guy on a nice win streak going in there against a champion? Just wait a couple days, man, and you can have your answer there. Who knows? Maybe he loses and Zombie makes the most sense. But I mean, even then, you kind of have to battle a few other guys, but still, like, I would at least wait that fight out, and they didn't. And so here we are. It's a good fight. I think they feel like the Zombie's more marketable or whatever, but I think they dropped the ball a little bit on this one.
I agree. Korean Zombie's on a one-fight win streak. He's won 3 out of 4. But how is a one-fight win streak better than a 9-fight win streak that Giga has? And should he get past Calvin Kattar, it'd be a 10-fight win streak. And let's not forget, Giga puts people to sleep. You know, he usually gets his finishes. So you got an exciting fighter there. Arguably probably speaks more English than the Korean Zombie. Not that that's the most important thing, but what I'm saying is it's a foreign fighter that's kind of made himself a little bit more relevant by being able to communicate that way. I don't know. I love me some Korean Zombie. It's not like he hasn't fought for the title before. He did back in like 2013 or something like that. And I'm sure he can get another shot, but I just thought they should have waited. But alas, it's done. And then we also have to wait an extra month for Aljamain Sterling against Peter Yan. My heart's not too broken. I want to see that fight, but it's kind of like whatever. I mean, that's a serious injury that Aljo had, the neck. Now, why this fight's been delayed some more, you know, they're saying it's from the Peter Yan camp. Who knows? But I'm willing to just wait an extra month if it means both of them come closer to 100%. I've waited this long.
Well, yeah, because at the end of the day, don't you want to – maybe some people aren't really intrigued by the matchup because they feel like they kind of already saw it, you know, in a sense, like even though it probably didn't work out the way we thought it would. But at the same time, like, it'll be interesting, man. We'll see. You're right. You want to make sure that all your ducks in a row, and let's just get this fight past us. Who knows? Maybe Aljamain Sterling comes out, does something crazy, and ices this guy. Can you imagine how crazy things would be after all that?
Big time. He'd be 2-0 too. But I think Peter Yan would have a chance at getting a third fight because of the way the first one ended. But you know, those 2-0s are tough for some guys. It's a miracle Max Holloway got a shot so easily, but he just impressed the hell out of us. So that's why he was slated to fight prior to this injury happening. So, of course, if you were headed to Vegas for March 5th for those two fights that just got moved to April 9th in Brooklyn, New York, you're probably throwing your hands up going, oh, now what are we going to do? Except you get Game Bred Masvidal against Chaos Covington. It's not for a title, goes. But this one's for a lot. You know, one of them's going to be the king of the 305. One of them's going to get the best of his former best friend. You know, both of these guys feel like the other guy, you know, did their a certain form of backstabbing, depending on who you talk to. I mean, someone's going to have to eat crow on March 6th.
Yeah, this is the fight that a lot of people have been wanting to see for a very long time. And I know, like, both guys, it's the strangest thing because if you look at their records, you know, this last year probably hasn't been very kind to both of them. But if you look at who they had to fight, I mean, come on. Like, this is a guy that in Kamaru Usman that's made a lot of people look bad, you know, and he's probably going to eventually overtake George St. Pierre as the greatest welterweight of all time. And Colby Covington's given him hell twice, you know, and Masvidal wasn't afraid to take the fight on short notice. I can kind of clean the slate a little bit and just look at it as two fighters that hate each other. And I think that smack talk leading up is going to be fun. But I'll tell you one thing, like, you better hope that we get to see this fight first in the cage and not on a press conference dais or not in the back or anywhere else at the PI. These two guys do not like each other, man. You got to keep them away from each other.
I agree. Security will be heightened, my friend. Now, there may be some people that said, you took two fights away from us, and as much as I'm feeling Masvidal versus Covington, well, where's the other fight? Well, we don't know, folks. Listen, I'm sure that if they took two fights away from you, they did one hell of a job giving you that main event. But there is a rumor out there, of Dustin Poirier versus Nate Diaz. Don't in no way come close to quoting me that's anywhere near done or anything, but I'm hearing it from enough of the chatter online to believe that it's a possibility. And if not, I bet you they still come up with some other interesting fights. But, you know, a busy day of matchmaking for the UFC in the last 24, 48 hours. That kind of puts that to bed. I do want to go back to Covington and Masvidal, something I heard recently today, actually. Can you believe Covington's minus 330 and Masvidal's plus 270?
Way too much. Well, I get it. Like, I get making him the favorite. But Jorge's shown in the past that he can be very explosive, especially against wrestlers. Like, look what happened to Ben Askren, right? So I don't know that you could put that line as high as it is. If it were me and I'm the matchmaker, I don't know that I'd go more than 200, 220 max.
Yeah, I think 200 is fair. If you just use the common opponent, for sure Covington did better against Usman than Masvidal. But that MMA math thing doesn't really work too much. Covington's has the better overall record, the better UFC record, but Masvidal also kind of became a different fighter in the last few years than he was when he was losing some of those split decisions. The dude's talented, and he's got one punch power. So I definitely think this fight, that fight, I don't think either guy should have been more than minus 200 over the other. I'll put it to you that way. But I had a feeling they would make Covington the favorite. I just didn't think it'd be that much. Maybe a big opportunity for Masvidal fans. We'll see. All right, listen, we have two interviews. So let's get to the first one. It's UFC flyweight Brandon Moreno. He's locked and loaded. We're ready to go. And then when we come back, we'll go over some of the results from the Invicta card that just wrapped up a little while ago. And we'll touch on some of the other news that's out there. Nation, we got a special guest tonight. It's UFC flyweight Brandon Moreno. He's going to be defending his belt against Davison Figueiredo at UFC 270 in Anaheim, California. Brandon, you were a guy that was chasing the title, you know, and you got your goal of becoming champion. Now come the title defenses. How important are the title defenses in your legacy, and you know, how important is it to stay on top of your game, because everyone's chasing you now?
Man, like you say, it's a second chapter. Obviously, before the belt, all my mind was on to get the belt, to be the champion, to beat Davison Figueiredo, and, you know, and be the first Mexican-born champion in the UFC, and that's it. Now, you know, talking with myself, asking me, so what is next for me? Definitely, I need to build my legacy. I need to defend my title. I want to clean the division. I know it's a hard work to do, because all the other guys in the division are hungry, no? And definitely, they are waiting for me. But man, I'm ready. I'm ready for the challenge, and I'm training so hard for this next fight, and that will be like my future.
Is there a particular athlete, a particular champion that you want to model yourself after, the way that they treated the public, the way they acted, I guess, you know, as a professional?
You know, no, man. Obviously, I have respect for all the champions in the division, right? I mean, UFC, boxing, whatever you want. I have two good examples. Francis Ngannou, George St. Pierre, I have admiration for them. But no, man, I want to build my own legacy and my own personality in all of this. You know, I want to be an example for the other guys in the future. So I'm working by myself for that.
For this fight, have you heard of a backup fighter that they may have in case something were to happen with the challenger, or I guess even yourself? We hear of that they sometimes have a challenger. Sometimes it remains secret. Sometimes we find out about it. Yeah. Is there one? Can you reveal to us?
No, man. I mean, being really honest with you, I don't hear nothing about the another fighter waiting for if something happened, no, in the future for this fight. For example, Kai Kara France put his hand up after his victory against Cody Garbrandt, but I don't hear nothing from the company, so no, I don't hear nothing official.
Okay, you know, in 2010, Goz and I were actually in the arena, the same arena you're going to fight in, when Cain Velasquez defeated Brock Lesnar. And were you there?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah. So afterwards, when we walked out, you saw a lot of Mexican flags. You saw a lot of cars honking their horns. Everybody was so proud of the Mexican-American fighter that had just won. It was really, really a surreal scene. Have you ever seen footage of it? And I'm sure if you haven't for that particular night, you've probably seen it when the Mexican national team win a big game in soccer, or maybe one of the boxers, you know, that's been champion from Mexico. What would a scene like that feel like to you, that you moved so many people on one particular night because you were able to successfully defend your title?
Man, first of all, when Cain Velasquez fought there and get the title, I don't have the money to go there, so that's why. But it was amazing, you know, because I think all this history with the Mexican roots start to come to the UFC, to the mixed martial arts. And yeah, you put example for the, you know, the national soccer team. Man, the Mexican people in Anaheim, you know, in this in that area, in all Los Angeles, it's incredible. Like, a lot of Mexican people there. I can feel even right now all the support of the Mexican people, you know. And another detail, Tijuana is very close to Anaheim, to the Honda Center. It's like, maybe if not traffic, like less than 2 hours. So I know a lot of guys from Tijuana who is going to the Honda Center for my fight to support me that night. And I'm excited, man. I'm excited to feel that good vibe that night. I feel it in Arizona when I won the title, and I know this time will be the same, or even even better.
What has your life been like since becoming champion? Have you felt, you know, it's been about 6 months now. Is there more pressure? Is it the same? More responsibilities? What can you share with us has been like the differences in your life?
Just more money for Legos. And that's it. No. Yes, man. You know, I think it's the responsibility, all the pressure on every single day. Like we say before, starting with my career, a lot of guys want my head. Right? Second one, yes, the compromises with the media tours, my goodness, the interviews, it's crazy. And yes, just think about the future and to feel the stress to know somebody wants your head. It's crazy. But again, I'm ready for the challenge.
Brandon, I know everybody always asks you about, you know, the way they respond to you in Mexico and compare you to all the other fighters that have come from Mexico. But what about here in the United States? How do you feel the American crowd have? Do you feel the love from them as well? Do you ever feel pressure to connect with them as well?
No, not really. I mean, when I start to talk in English before, I feel like my connection with people from other countries start to evolve very, very, very well. And obviously the Mexican people is amazing with me. I feel so much love, you know, in this time when social media is crazy and the hate is very easy to throw, you know, in a comment, for example. I don't feel that. I feel like everybody is like very nice with me. Definitely I have some hater somewhere putting something bad to me, but in general, I feel just a love, and I can feel all the good vibes of the people. But yeah, in the last years, I start to feel the love of, you know, people from other countries, you know, and the Mexicans in the United States is too much. Like, a lot of Mexican people living in the United States, so I feel support everywhere, and that's amazing.
Brandon, I have to imagine, you know, your focus has been on Davidson Figueiredo for over a year, you know, training for him nonstop. I'm sure you're doing all your studying, but it's human nature to know that there are other people in the division, right? Does anybody ever catch your eye? Have you kind of kept tabs on the guys that are below Davidson Figueiredo right now? Or is 1,000% of your focus always have to be Davidson Figueroa? Because it's a fun division and there's great fighters in there.
Yeah, I'm in the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, the flyweight division has started to be very, very excited. Yes, definitely. I mean, Askar Askarov is there and he's dangerous. He's real. Pantoja, I mean, he beat me twice before, right? Definitely, I'm a different fighter. But he's still dangerous. Kaikara France looks sharp in his last fight against Cody Garbrandt. Alex Alex Perez is always there. You know, I'm an analyst too, guys, so I need to see all the fighters in my division. And I try to do my job every single time, you know, to do my homework and watch all these fighters. But, man, right now, yes, my mind is completely on Figueiredo, you know.
What does being a legend in the sport mean to you? And what is the difference between that and being a legend in life?
Man, everything. You know, I feel like the first thing is giving me the second one. I know if I can make something huge in the sport, it's important. But if I can keep my same mentality, my same feelings to the people, I'll have more respect from the people around me. And that is very, very important too. I want to be a legend in the sport, but at the same time, I don't want to lose my focus on my mentality and the way I'm with the people.
Brandon, two quick ones that just came to mind. How many interviews do you do a week now with as popular as you've become?
Man.
Or maybe not every week, but your worst week. Like, you know, when you were inundated with a lot of them.
Maybe like eight interviews per week, something like that.
Okay.
Maybe sometime less. Actually, right now for my training camp, I was very focused and I was talking with my guys, like, hey man, I don't want to get too much interviews right now because I want to be very, very focused in this fight. Right now, I understand I need to do some media stuff, you know, because the fight is very close. So I'm starting to do it right now. But yes, the life after the title changed completely.
Wow. Okay, and the last one, like we told you before the interview, we saw when you were with the YouTube sensation Scorpion.
Yeah,
you were with him for the day. And I wanted to ask you, he asked you about Assassin Baby, your nickname, and you were talking about a fight when you were 17 years old. And the guy introduced you as Baby Assassin.
Yeah.
Why did you flip it to Assassin Baby? Is it just sound different in Spanish?
No, actually, it was for the American people. I mean, some guys who talk English told me, like, The baby assassin sounds like I'm killing babies or something like that. So that's why I changed the words.
Yeah, yeah.
Killing babies. That's why.
Is that a knife, un cuchillo? Killing babies. I don't know why I didn't think of that. Yeah, you're right. You know, just because, like, there's been like the young assassin, and we've heard so many assassins. And I thought, well, okay, but I remember hearing the guy say it. He said, "Baby Assassin."
I remember that night. The guy say my name and say the nickname there, and everything was like, I don't like the nickname. But then the people start to tell me like that, you know, the Baby Assassin. I just changed the order of the words, and that's it. Right now, I feel too much love for my nickname.
Got it. All right. Thank you very much for the time today. We really appreciate it. I hope the rest of your camp goes smooth and safe, the weight cut, and I hope you have an excellent fight in Anaheim at UFC 270 in front of that big Mexican-American crowd. You're going to feel it, man. It's going to be amazing for you.
Man, I'm excited. I can't even imagine, and I feel so excited to watch all the Mexican people there.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again for the time, and enjoy your evening.
See you guys.
I'm glad the champ was able to squeeze us in. I haven't heard too much media from him out there, but he kind of explained why. He's really, really focused. And now as we're getting close to the home stretch, now he's going to turn it on and maybe sell some of them pay-per-views.
But you have to understand that when you're a champion, you have to do more media. But this is a guy who speaks English and Spanish. So he's getting drilled on both sides. You know what I mean? He's doing interviews in Spanish. He's getting interviews in English. There's a lot. And if you know Brandon, not that we know him that well, but he is a guy that does not take his training lightly. I guarantee you he's figured out a way to balance everything. And it's just not in him to not show up 100%. I think that guy will be ready, and I think this is going to be a really good fight.
This first title title defense is so important. It'll be a big confidence boost for him if he knows that he can not only kind of get Figueredo out of his life. Remember, if Figueredo doesn't get that point deduction, he's 1-1 versus Figueredo. But instead, it ended in a draw. They got the immediate rematch. So on paper, he's 1-0-1 against Figueredo, but it could very easily be 1-1. But if he can beat him this time, he doesn't have to worry about Figgy for a long time. Not to say that he's sweating him, I guess, but he can basically start looking forward towards fighting other fighters, you know, preparing for other fighters. It, you know, when you have that picture of somebody on your refrigerator or on the bathroom mirror, the person that you wake up and you immediately get your game face on when you're going to start training, it's cool and all, but you want to switch that pie hole up, you know, and put someone else up there. Kai Kara France, Askarov. I'm sure he wants to shut Pantoja up.
Oh, yeah.
So this will be big for him. He'll get some pay-per-view points, so it'll be more lucrative for him. And, you know, I think there's something that goes with the whole, you can't say one-time wonder or one-hit wonder, because, come on, when you become a champ, you're a champ. But the old, you know, becoming a champ and not having that title defense, you know, there's a lot of fighters that have done that. So once you start separating yourself from those, that's huge.
Yeah, title defenses are really, really big. I mean, especially with, there's so many champions, the belt gets thrown around so much that you really have to nitpick at people. And that'll be definitely something people will look at if he can't get that title defense under his belt.
Some other news that's out there, Daniel Cormier, you know, he's never really had too many things good to say about John Jones, but on his show, his ESPN show, DC and RC, he just believes that Jones, when he fights at heavyweight, he's going to lose to either Cyril Gane or Francis Ngannou, the winner of that fight. Now, he says time away, the weight difference, and those guys being who they are, meaning the fact that Gane and Ngannou are pretty talented heavyweights, you know, powerful, big, strong, fast, everything. He just thinks it's too much for Jones. Do you agree?
Yes, I do to a certain extent. Okay, look, here's the thing. With the amount of time that John, like if John Jones would have taken these fights sooner rather than later, I think he would have been in a world of trouble. But because he has kind of had a chance to fill his body out the way he wants, trial and error and all that, I think he will be a little bit bigger than what we kind of picture him being. But if you look at those two matchups, there's definitely ways for him to win that. I think he has a better chance against Francis Ngannou, to be honest, than he would with Cyril Gane, because Cyril Gane is going to fight him the way he would probably fight Francis Ngannou. And if you do that, if they sit there and they kind of chess match, point fight each other, I think Gane wins that fight all day. With Francis Ngannou, if John Jones tries to fight him, if he can be kind of methodical and calculated, I think he can still find a few holes there in Francis. He just has to be able to get out of the way of some of these ridiculous punches and hopefully take Francis to the ground and hope for something down there. But ways for him to win, but I agree. I agree with DC. I think it's an uphill battle.
Yeah. What's interesting goes is not so much like as DC was talking where too many people, you know, hand on chin, like, you know, the tactics of the fight and how interesting DC's breakdown. You know, this sport has become so big in some ways, and a lot of it is just that drama that fuels the sport. All I could think of, and I'm part of it, honestly, but all I could think of was, I wonder what Jones has to say about DC. He's not going to let this one go. I wasn't so much thinking of the tactics. Like, is he right? Southpaw? Distance? You know what I mean? I wasn't thinking so much that versus what Jones is going to have to say about all this.
It's coming. And I think the line on that is higher than Colby and Masvidal.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so a few fights that got booked. Alexa Grasso, her fight, she was supposed to fight this weekend, but her opponent pulled out. Now she gets Joanne Wood, formerly known as Joanne Calderwood, and they're going to fight in Columbus, Texas. Sorry, Columbus, Ohio. And that's the same card that Matt Brown's going to fight at. He got moved as well. Remember, he was going to fight in December. And it's headlined by Yuri Prochaska and Jan Blachowicz. So that's going to be a really, really good fight. sorry, Alexander Rakic and Jan Blachowicz, Jiří Procházka is probably Glover Teixeira's next opponent.
Yeah,
if I'm being honest. So that's one fight that was booked. Tisha Torres versus Mackenzie Dern, that got booked for April 9th. Easy to remember. That's UFC 273 in Brooklyn, New York. I remember it because it's our mom's birthday. We just spoke to Mackenzie Dern, and she had a little injury that she was nursing, but looks like she's going to be ready to go in a few months. Nate Landwehr versus Lerone Murphy, that's another fight that got booked. Pollyanna Botello versus Ji Young Kim. They are not going to be fighting at UFC 270. And I advise people to kind of almost look at the schedule at MMA Junkie because a few fights dropped off, including Saeed Yakub Kakhramonov, who we interviewed here on MMA Junkie Radio last week. He was slated to fight Brian Kelleher. He's not now, but Brian Kelleher does have a new opponent. So a huge big mix-up. This Omicron's for real. It's really been affecting the fight cards. All right. I spoke a little too long. It looks like Andrew Simon's ready to go. So let's talk to Andrew Simon, who's going to be on Undercover Boss this Friday. He's now working as the CEO of the Fremont Street Experience. But for a long time, he was involved in mixed martial arts as the CEO of Access TV and HDNet Fights. So we're going to talk to him, and then we'll come back and we'll give you some of those Invicta results that I teased earlier. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. We got another friend of ours from the MMA world who's left for a new endeavor, but we're so excited to talk to him because, again, he had quite an impact while he was in mixed martial arts. It's Andrew Simon, the CEO and president of the Fremont Street Experience, and you all know him formerly as the president and CEO of Access TV, which started off as HDNet Bites. What's going on, Andrew? How are you?
What's happening, guys? Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. It's going to be like the old days. I got a lot of questions. I'm ready to chop it up. But I am so excited about Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central. You are going to be featured on Undercover Boss, the Emmy Award-winning series on CBS. 11th season. We already had the debut episode one, and you're on week two. And I've been checking out all the previews. A couple tears have streamed down my cheek. I can't wait for Friday.
Yeah, this is going to be unbelievable. You know, for 12 years, I was behind the scenes in pro wrestling, mixed martial arts. For the first time really ever, I'm on screen. But most importantly, we're showing off Fremont Street Experience here in Las Vegas, the downtown area, and the employees and what their jobs are really like. And it really gave me a chance to go back. 30 years ago, I dealt blackjack from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. So it's like going back in time and doing those jobs where really the work gets done in Las Vegas.
I was going to bring that up from blackjack dealer all the way to now running the Fremont Street Experience, which I learned through the research there. Aside from Times Square, in New York, your all spot there is like as big as it gets.
Yeah, this is like the second most traveled street in the United States of America. I mean, you take a look, 25 million people a year are coming to Fremont Street Experience. And one of the reasons I did this was everybody knows about the Las Vegas Strip. Everybody knows I want to see everything there is on the Strip. But about 50% of the people come downtown. I want it to be 100% come downtown when they come to Las Vegas in the future.
And I get it, because there are a lot of people that are only Strip people, and there's actually some people that are only downtown people. You're not as worried as much about the Strip. You're saying those Strip people, come on over. We got a lot to offer. Spend a day here out of your weekend is what you're saying.
Yeah, we're like no other place on earth. I mean, we have the largest single digital display in the world. We got a zip line that goes 1,400 feet, five city blocks long. We have 600,000 watt sound systems, 50 million LED lights in the canopy out there. We got live music, about 20 hours a day of live music. I mean, it is an entertainment overload when you come to Fremont Street Experience.
And I get that Fremont Street Experience does need to be visited over and over because there's so many people that haven't given it a chance, as it's kind of had its rebirth a while ago, and it just keeps getting better and better with new venues like the D about 5 years ago, Circa last year. And yes, I've been on one of the two zip lines. I believe I was more on the JV one versus that new Slotzilla one that's a lot bigger and a lot higher.
Yeah, you get to fly like Superman or Superwoman, five city blocks. You probably sat in a little chair pose, you know, going down there for half the ride. But there's one that goes five city blocks. You know, you mentioned MMA Junkie. You come on down. I'll give you a complimentary ride with Ghost, and you guys check it out, and you'll see what the difference is. You know, most recently, Carrot Top did it on New Year's Eve with going live with Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen. They did a ride on Slotzilla on New Year's Eve. We had Kaylee Hartung from Good Morning America did it about 3 or 4 weeks ago live on air. And so it's kind of become the rite of passage on media to go do our Slotzilla ride live on TV. So we got to do it live on Junkie one day.
Man, you haven't seen me in a while, but if it can handle 250 pounds, then I'm in.
That's all muscle though, right?
It's all muscle. Heck yeah.
There you go.
And speaking of that, you know, we saw the previews there for Undercover Boss on Friday. And I know there's some things that we can't talk about, but I believe whatever's out there for us to look at and preview, we can. And you actually, it looked like, at least from some of the pictures, that you got to touch base with some of the employees involved in the zip line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's going to be one segment where you see I do work the zip line. And I'll tell you what, that it's not a simple job. And one of the things I don't think that will come across on the show was that we were shooting this and it was about 115, 116 degrees. And one of the things they did was they seemed to have found me like a very small t-shirt. Like I did my best to lose weight before this show, get in shape. They found a small little green t-shirt that I seem to probably sweat through. It's clinging a little too tight for me. But yeah, that job is rough, man. I'll tell you what, all the jobs that I learned about, you know, you have a brand new appreciation for what people do. And, you know, my job as CEO is to try to find a way to make their jobs easier.
Every job carries pride, responsibility, you know, many adjectives that we can attach. But specifically to this one, I was thinking, what was it like when you strap everyone in? Like, is there even a second that you have to rethink, did I go through all my steps? Because like you said, they're suspended up high. They're going super fast. I mean, obviously that there's a little bit of a danger to that ride.
There's a ton of safety issues that go into it. And I can guarantee you they were double, triple, quadruple checking my work because I wouldn't have trusted me to strap myself in. And I learned. And the other things you'll learn about a lot of these jobs as you watch the episode, there's a lot going on. There's weight issues. There's other pieces. There's learning on all these positions. And, you know, one of the things that Las Vegas is facing and the service industry and frankly the whole country is staffing. And if you're making jobs tough for people, they're not going to stick around. So you got to find a way to make these jobs enjoyable, create a good work environment, and also obviously make it safe for all our guests and tourists.
If that wasn't high enough, you were really tested when you actually had to go on top of the roof at Fremont Experience. How does trash get up there? Is it from our windy days, or is it just partiers that have a balcony access that just goof off? How did that happen, and what was that experience?
You're gonna have to watch a show on that one, George. I can't comment too much. You'll find out more on that one. But one thing I would say is that we'll learn whether I'm afraid of heights or not when we do this show. There were quite a few jobs that tested you know, one's ability to go up high. You know, it's funny. One thing I'll say is you watch a lot of these episodes and getting prepared for the show, to be honest, I watched a lot of episodes. Every morning I'd work out and I'd watch a new episode and try to go, okay, what did they do in the past? Where might they get me? And, you know, some of these shows I watched and the CEO be like, oh my God, it's so hard to use a touchscreen here on the ordering system, whether it's hamburger or hot dog, which do I press? I can tell you, they didn't give me those types of jobs. My jobs all seem to be like, you know, Andrew, can you lift 500 pounds? And can you climb and jump high like Superman? Are you afraid to fall, you know, 1,000 feet to your death? So my job seemed to have been a little bit more physically exerting. I don't know if that was from the mixed martial arts pro wrestling world. They assumed that I would be more open-minded because, you know, again, I definitely watched a lot of episodes, and I do think this episode had a lot more grueling. And like I talked about before, the physical conditions of shooting this in the summertime in Las Vegas, and you guys live here, you know what the heat is like here in the summertime. And so, again, I'm not feeling sorry for myself at all, but shooting this, you know, over this kind of time period gave me a better appreciation, really. What do my people do every day? And are we putting the right things in place for them to deal with that kind of heat in the summertime?
Yeah, I get it, man. The wigs, the makeup, all that. And I will wait till Friday to watch that part that really, really interested me. But I do want to give a shout out to the guy that was with you, seemed to keep you so calm through it that I'm glad that hopefully he made it a more enjoyable experience in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, again, our employees are great. And, you know, they really wanted to teach me the jobs. You know, obviously they didn't know who I was, but the pride they take in their jobs and in Fremont Street as a whole. That's the one thing, you know, I've learned is that at our company, we have so many people that have been there for decades, that have been there, some of them since Fremont Street opened in 1995, the Fremont Street experience. So, you know, they have so much experience and care so much about the property and just watching that and the pride they take, you know, just even on New Year's. And it's just, we had a big New Year's Eve celebration on Fremont Street experience. And I was down there the whole day and all night. And then at 2 a.m., I'm walking back up the street and I saw one of the people that was on the show and watching her clean up. And the whole street was almost clean by 2 in the morning. And I kept calling her and she didn't hear me. And I was just watching how diligent she was about doing her job. It's not an act for TV. It's not an act for the CEO. It's not an act for who she thought she was training. She just takes pride in what she does. And that's what you look for in employees. And to be honest, my whole career, it didn't matter what job I did, I always took a lot of pride in everything I did, from dealing blackjack and baccarat roulette to working in kitchens. Like, I always wanted to be really good at what I do. And so I appreciate when I see that in others.
Andrew, we've always known you as kind of a behind the scenes type guy. Even when you've had every opportunity to be in front of the camera, sometimes you've chosen to, but other times you've kind of been in the background. So to hear that you were going to do this from beginning to end, how long is it from the moment that they contact you and say, this is what we'd like to do, and you agree, to the moment it actually gets done? And what was your thought process when that idea was thrown your way?
That's a great question. Yeah, I had about 12 years where I may have done Inside MMA twice or three times over 12 years. It wasn't my dream to be in front of the camera or a personality. And what happened was I started this job in September of 2020 during the pandemic. Access TV had been sold, was figuring out what I want to do next. And this job kind of came up and seemed real interesting, a completely different challenge, completely removed from MMA, pro wrestling, and everything I had been doing. And it was kind of a little bit scary at first and just trying to make that decision. And so I took this job in September of 2020 in the middle of the pandemic. I heard from Undercover Boss for the first time in October of 2020, just 1 month into the job. And I was kind of like, well, this would be a really great way to hear, because people really didn't know me, I thought, at that point. And I could kind of do this, learn a little bit more about all the jobs, the positions, what to do better, kind of tested it out with my board. Hey, what do you guys think? Do you guys want to do this? Because it's not my dream to do it in life. They were like, you should definitely think about it. Do you want to do it? And we went back and forth and we went through the process all the way from October of 2020. And we probably didn't shoot it till maybe 10 months, 11 months later goes. And, you know, it was, and trying to keep that secret in Las Vegas, while there are people who are dedicated to rumors and finding stuff out, it really tested everything to keep that secret, because if this got out, the whole show's a bust, and all the money based on the production and pre, you know, getting ready for the show, everything would have been ruined, and the show doesn't air and you waste all this time and money and energy. So I was really proud that we were able to keep the secret for as long as we did.
Well, part of that keeping the secret is obviously the disguise that you wear. I guess my first question to these people would be, what are you going to make me look like? What are the ideas and what kind of input would I have towards that? Did you have any input towards the disguise, or were they like, this is what you're going to look like and that's that?
Yeah, I had zero input and I had no idea what that disguise was going to look like. They had me, you know, do some measurements on my own of what, like, you know, my glasses prescription, a wig size, things like that. But literally, I did not know what I was going to look like. And I don't know if you guys saw the clip where they kind of had me in the bathroom. The woman is named Shelby was getting me ready to put on the makeup and wig. I didn't know until that moment what I was gonna look like. And then I walk out and see my best friend Dave and my girlfriend. That was the first time I saw the disguise. It was the first time they saw the disguise. So that's the part of it that like gets really frustrating. I already see online where people are like, oh, the disguise looks like crap, or you look like crap, or, you know, I would know you in a second. They had no idea for a second. None of us know anything. And that part of the show is 100% legit. I knew nothing about the jobs that we were doing. I knew nothing about the people that were involved. I knew nothing about the disguise. They do keep you in the dark on all of it, and they do a fantastic job at it.
Because of that, was every day as nerve-wracking as the first day, or did it get easier as you went along?
So the jobs, yeah, they were hard. They were physically, they took their toll on me a little bit. I mean, I like to think like I'm a physical specimen like Brock Lesnar or something like that. But the truth was, you know, after doing some of these jobs, trying to do the next one, because a job might go 17 hours one day, and then you sleep 4 hours, and then you're doing 15 to 18 hours the next day, and then the next day, all different hours and times. It wasn't like a normal schedule, because Fremont Street operates 24/7. So I did some overnight jobs that went in from overnight to the next day till the next evening. And so it just took its toll on me. So nothing was, I wouldn't say nerve-wracking, but physically by the end, I think, you know, I think you see me scraping gum in one of them. I'm not even sure I could lean over to scrape the gum. I was doing my best I could at that point.
I wanted to ask, you've always had a great relationship with your employees, whether you're hands-on or like you said, being a boss from home. But what did this show do in terms of your connection with your employees? How much did you learn in that regard?
Yeah, this gave me a whole new, again, there were some jobs and, you know, that you're just amazed that employees, you know, again, whether it's equipment failures or whether they weren't being given the right supplies or whether there were better ways to do things, that wasn't getting to my desk or that wasn't getting up to me. And some of these solutions might be hundreds of thousands, some might be $1,000. And if $1,000 makes all your employees a lot happier and you don't do it that day, you're a terrible boss. And so like some of these things, you know, I wanted to implement like in the moment right then. And so again, and other things are long-term pieces for employees. Some of them you when you do the job yourself, you're like, wow, if I was doing this every day, what would I need to be successful? And sometimes, you know, new eyes on problems, some things you could solve immediately. So again, overall, having that view and appreciation of what people do on a daily basis, and knowing you have the ability to affect change and make change, not only in the workplace, but in their lives, and impact change in their lives, was real important to me.
What was it like when this was revealed to your employees? The reaction
that you're gonna have to see. You're gonna have to see that. I mean, that, you know, I gotta give a reason to watch, but I will say that the most rewarding part of doing this show is knowing that you can change people's lives. And I will say I think we do.
And then now you're obviously limited because of filming and time. You can get to be a part of certain jobs, but do you think you'll have an interest in now getting to know every single job in detail, or do you even need to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't get to do every job on the street, and some, you know, the reality is you need different training to do different jobs that maybe I wouldn't be able to get that quickly. But you know, I've always been appreciative. Listen, I grew up, you know, both my parents were educators, and I've always worked since I was 15 or 16 years old. I've done jobs from the front line up. I've always been appreciative of the front line and everything they have to do. And that's where you learn stuff, right? You know, being a CEO or being a president or VP, we don't get to see the daily interaction with customers and hear what's going on from the same way the frontline will. And so I've always had a huge respect for what they have to go through. And during COVID times and during, you know, the craziness of the last year and a half with, you know, you have to wear a mask, you don't have to wear a mask, you vaccinate, don't vaccinate. And the abuse frontline has had to go through over the years. Again, our people are spectacular on Fremont Street. And again, the one thing about the show, it's not going to show every pretty moment, right? This wasn't a pure marketing piece to make us look good. This was, there's stuff that's good, there's stuff that isn't, but as a whole, are we a good place to be, and what can I do to make people's jobs better?
Part of the previews that I saw that I really enjoyed, and they're so well done by CBS, was just even them bringing up the fact of, you mentioned your parents, the summer camp, and then, of course, knowing your background at Cornell, hospitality and management, you could almost tell as I was, you know, you're piecing all this together with the job that you have, that now looking back to a year ago when you found out you were going to do the job, you were the perfect guy for that job.
You know, it's strange, right? I love mixed martial arts. I love pro wrestling. I love television entertainment. This job that I have now has a lot of it, right? I came from a music television network with Access TV, and now I do live concerts every night of the week. But we have big concerts, small concerts, nightly entertainment. We have the world's largest digital display screen where we can put on entertainment and different things up there. So again, my career path, George, I've known you now, I don't even know how long, if it's been 14 years or 13 years. I've never really been confined by this is what I have to do, whether it's one job or another. I'm really intrigued by business and what's the best way to make great business happen by working with good people, trying to be a good leader, try to help people achieve their goals. I love promoting people internally, seeing people advance in their careers, help them with their goals. But I've also promoted people and helped them find jobs externally. And one of the great things we do at Fremont Street with our, we have a giant security team, obviously, at Fremont Street to keep everybody safe. But even like last month, I believe we had two or three officers become Metro Henderson and North Las Vegas Police Department. And that's an honor when they choose our people and people get career paths. So I'm really interested in business careers, motivating people. So whether it's in mixed martial arts, whether it's pro wrestling, whether it's Fremont Street, but again, I like the challenge, and so far it's been working out pretty great.
Andrew, we're going to keep just a couple minutes of OT here. Goes has a couple more, and then I want to do a quick blast so everybody knows exactly what they can expect at Fremont Experience. Because if you haven't been downtown in years, folks, you definitely have to go. Goes, go ahead.
Well, Andrew, I think our audience is so used to seeing you in mixed martial arts, right, behind the scenes. And I wanted to ask you, like, now that you've been disconnected a little bit from that, looking back, what would you say was your maybe a mark that you left on our sport because you were entrenched in it for so long? Is there one thing that you're very proud of that you did for our sport?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot. I mean, I take a look back and, you know, with HDNet and then Access TV, you know, those were great years. And I think, you know, we created so many opportunities for fighters to be seen for the first time on television, the first time they did interviews backstage. We brought Fedor Emelianenko to the U.S. for the first live fight ever when we did that Yarenoka show from Japan. We worked with everybody from Pro Elite to Strike Force to the IFL to WEC. And I think at one point, and you guys might know better than me, we worked with 50 plus mixed martial arts promotions. We've seen how LFA has grown and Lion Fight Muay Thai and, you know, CES MMA, and they're all still going and doing great. And so when I take a look at all the champions that have been out there and, you know, all the guys that we met over the years and still work with over the years and create, again, like we talked about, careers for guys. And again, in pro wrestling, the same thing happened as well. You know, we did amazing stuff, Adam Swift and I on our team and the rest of the team at Access TV. I mean, so many of the guys that we worked with from Ring of Honor and New Japan, and wow, even Women of Wrestling, but really the New Japan and Ring of Honor guys are all superstars in WWE and All Elite Wrestling, multi-millionaires across the board, whether it was Seth Rollins or Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho got another lease in life, and Jim Ross, you know, again, and when I say another lease in life, Chris Jericho is one of the biggest superstars in the world, and his fights with Kenny Omega were huge on our network, and Chris is one of the biggest podcasts, and JR is back doing AEW, and I take a look across the board in the pro wrestling world to mixed martial arts, and I think that Access TV really played a big role in a lot of people's careers. And also from the broadcast side, love to see what Michael Schiavello is doing now, you know, with One and all the people out there. Again, we had a great run over there, and I think we left a big mark in the industry and taking it to the next level.
You know, watching fights live, I've seen a lot, different promotions, a lot of different styles. But one night that will always stick in my head was when there were actually fights on Fremont Street. And I remember Chris Cyborg was at Lion Fight. And I just remember the way I describe it to whoever wasn't there was you actually felt like you were inside of a video game or something. It was the coolest experience ever. Do you think at any point these careers can maybe cross paths again where mixed martial arts or boxing or pro wrestling could ever come back to Fremont Street and you can kind of the best of both worlds there?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, we did the first live combat sports event or live sporting event from Fremont Street. I think that was back in 2011 when I was at Access TV, but it was HDNet at the time. And we did that first live event with Scott Kent and doing the Muay Thai show with Chris Cyborg over on Fremont. And it was like, it was amazing. That really was one of my favorite events too. Just the look and feel of doing a fight on Fremont Street outdoors with all the lights and the canopy. And it was awesome. And whether it could happen again, there's definitely been a lot of conversation about it. People want to do it all the time. And George is a big fan of the Lakers, but Jeannie Buss and David McLean of Wow Women of Wrestling, who I worked with, they were out on Fremont about 2 months ago when they were announcing their new deal with CBS. And they were inquiring about it as well, because they did a thing with, I believe, Entertainment Tonight. We put Wow up on the canopy. They did a big announcement there, and that's something we would definitely consider, whether it's boxing, pro wrestling, MMA, if it makes sense. And we could pull it off financially, I'd love to do it again, and this time be on the other side.
That was the fight versus Jorina Bars, if I'm not mistaken, right? With Chris Cyborg?
No.
That was not when Jorina beat Chris a different day. This one, Chris won on Fremont, but she, you know, I remember she came in really, like, because she had to cut weight, and it was pretty tough, and but that night was pretty cool. It's probably Kevin Ross on the show.
Kevin Ross was there, yeah. Yep. I think he lost a controversial decision.
That night, just the visuals and the photos, if you ever get a chance to pull those back up, that was such a cool night.
Yeah.
I have a good picture of myself, Pat Miletich, and the late Daryl Ewald and Schiavello in the ring there. And it was just such a cool night to pull that off in our hometown, because – you guys know doing outdoor events is always a risk to begin with for to have it come off magically. You know, we had New Year's Eve the other night and we didn't know if it was going to rain, snow, wind. You never know what's going to happen when you do an outdoor event. And you know, the stakes are high when it's all your financials, all the money on the line, you're paying the fighters either way. You better be able to pull that off.
Yeah, definitely. Goes said it perfectly. With all the lights that were there and with the fighting action, it really felt like some sort of a video game. And I hope you can bring back some form of combat sports. That was Muay Thai, but if it's Muay Thai, MMA, pro wrestling, whatever it may be, I would love to see it at Fremont Experience. And for people to know, boy, there was some interesting stats that I heard about Fremont Experience. 50 million LED lights. Is that what I heard right?
Yeah, it's 50 million LED lights in that canopy. It's the world's single largest digital display, you know, that goes almost five city blocks long.
And 600,000 watts of boom when you have your concerts on stage?
That's a 600,000 watt sound system that goes through the canopy and everything else when we're playing music. You know, when we have our shows, we have Shakira, The Killers, Imagine Dragons. We have shows that go on the hour that are specially designed for the Viva Vision canopy, about eight minute shows that where we feature that our Viva Vision canopy along with the sound system. And then amazing technology, entertainment, and speaker systems on all three stages that we have concerts going about 20 hours a day of live music.
Yeah, I've seen that. Lots of concerts. And I wanted to ask you, the special events concerts, what's your goal in 2022 in terms like, is that a monthly thing? I was trying to look on the calendar to see when the next one were. And granted, I know that the hand we've been dealt now with pandemic just really makes things kind of like a big question mark, but what can you tell us in that regard?
Yeah, we budget millions and millions of dollars. And the one thing that is different about Fremont Street that I should say is we almost never charge for music. The only night of the year we charge for music is on New Year's Eve. All the other nights, 364 days, we're not charging. And the concerts we put on all year long, from you know big bands to small bands, we don't charge. And so we have a Downtown Rocks concert series that'll be somewhere between 12 and 16 concerts this year, you know, where you'll see the Chevelles, the Tonics, Sister Hazel. You know, this past year, I'm trying to think of, you know, we had Walker Hayes come over. We've had, you know, Vince Neil all year long. You know, we do a majority of those concerts between like April up to November, December, you know, is when we really start kicking in. January, February, a little cold to be putting those on, but again, doesn't mean we won't. It just depends on the touring schedule and the COVID, you know, situation and everything else. But you'll get about 12 to 16 big concerts a year with known name bands. And then every night we have other bands that are appearing on Fremont Street.
Last question. Since it's publicly put out on social media and things like that, what's the buzz like on Fremont Street amongst some of your friends, some of the hotel owners that you know, about Friday's episode on Undercover Boss? I'm sure there's a lot of people that I got to be pretty pumped for a lot of the attention, a lot of the publicity, you know, because this is a worldwide thing. You know, a lot of people know about Fremont Street.
Yeah, I think this, you know, again, I haven't seen the episode yet. You have seen as much as I have. So I've only seen the clips. So, you know, there's a little bit of nervousness because I know, hey, I don't know what they used and didn't use. And you know, the one thing when you do this show as the CEO, you learn real quick. You can't be too worried about your ego. They're going to make you look bad, right? If I tripped once over 5 days, I'm sure there's going to be a repeat of me tripping over and over and over and over again, right? Because it's not about me looking good and that part of it. But as a whole, I think we're all excited for people to see the employees, to see what they do, to see how the streets are represented. Again, my goal is to make every time when people come to Las Vegas, if they go to the Strip, we want them to come downtown as well. I mean, we have the Circa, which is a brand new nearly $1.5 billion property that was built. First time in 40 years, a new property was built. So I think people are coming. I think they want to see it. And, you know, for me personally, my old boss, Mark Cuban, is on Shark Tank on Friday nights at 8 o'clock. And this show is Friday night at 8 o'clock. As well, Undercover Boss. It would make my day if we took down Shark Tank. I got to work with Mark Burnett, the creator of that show, on King of the Cage for a little bit in mixed martial arts. But again, they have a little lead in the ratings, but I would love to challenge Mr. Cuban on this one.
I think you're going to get him. Georgia beat Alabama. This is the week for the upsets.
Hey, and the Raiders came through, right, in a miracle game this week. So, you know, anything can happen. But again, you know, I think more importantly, I think people are going to be, if anything, there's heartwarming stories that go into it. And when you hear the stories of our employees the things they've been through, that's the part, again, that, you know, at the end of every episode, it does cheer you up a little bit, right? You know, because you're like, wow, you know, I know I have it good in life and I've had a pretty easy life, all things considered, you know, compared to what some other people have been through. And so the ability to do this show and really know that you just changed somebody's life as well is what really made the show for me.
Yeah, folks, cbs.com/shows/undercover_boss. Check it out. There is some great previews. I gave a shout out to the gentleman that was looking out for your welfare and safety way up at the top. I got to give a shout out to the lady in the custodial who was helping you scraping the gum. I know you're a little bit of a germaphobe, but man, she looked like she had so much pride in her work. That's the first person I would, if I had like some sort of a franchise or something, I'd say, I need workers like that lady, and I'd find a spot for that lady. So That alone already had tears coming down. But I got it. I got it set for the DVR. I can't wait. We're so happy and proud for you, Andrew.
Oh, thanks, guys. You know, I'm proud of you too, guys. Man, we've been through a lot in this business and overall, and you guys have always been great to me and supportive. And again, you know, let's get rid of all this stuff in our city and go out and do some fun stuff and get you down to Fremont, and we'll get you that ride on the zip line.
For sure. Can't wait. Folks, Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. Check out Andrew Simon on Undercover Boss. It's the 11th season of the award-winning Undercover Boss, Emmy award-winning Undercover Boss, and this will be the second episode in the 11th season. Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon, Andrew. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that was a nice chat. We had a lot to catch up on, but I can't lie, man. I will probably watch that show live. I'm pumped. Mm-hmm. Andrew's become a good friend of ours, and him being here in Las Vegas and us having been to the Fremont Street Experience, it'll kind of be cool to see the behind the scenes, you know, in full. We've seen some of these teasers, but it'll be kind of cool to see how they apply that show, which when I watched it, I've enjoyed it, how they apply it over here.
The clips alone get you teary-eyed, so I can't imagine what the whole thing will be like.
Yeah, check it out on Friday, folks. 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central. I believe over here we'll have to watch it at 8 p.m. Pacific, although there's some weird channels on DirecTV in the 300s. Sometimes you can sneak the East Coast feed, so we'll see. All right, the Invicta FC 45 card that took place tonight here on MMA Junkie, we got the results. I watched a few of them, and I saw some pretty good action. So congrats to Invicta FC for getting 2022 started off on the right way. And here's a quick recap of what happened. Sarah Kietzka defeated Maria Jose Favela. Split decision win there. Katie Saul submitted Tamika Jones. Helen Peralta defeated Elise Pohn. Haley Cowan defeated Monica Franco. Ramona Pascual defeated Shamir Pishua. And in the main event, Jessica Del Boni, even the score against Alicia Zapatella. She defeated her unanimous decision. She's now the new atomweight champion. And, of course, they're 1-1, but Alicia Zapatella had also said she was going to move up to strawweight. So I don't know if she'll rethink that, because this could be a big fight for her and Invicta. And I'm sure when she thought she was moving up to strawweight, she probably thought, you know, I could be a champ. I'm probably going to take care of this Brazilian gal. It didn't work out that way, so we'll see what she thinks of it. But overall, pretty cool to have some MMA back on MMA Junkie like the old days.
That was pretty badass. And, you know, now it's different, right? Like, technology's changed so much that you can just easily mirror your TV or download an app, and you can actually watch it on your TV. And you got to do the third fight. I think you have to do the trilogy. Shannon Knapp is so smart. She'll find a way to make that happen, but you got to do the trilogy.
The judges scoring, any thoughts there? For those that haven't known, they've been doing it for a while. And the way it works is they reveal it to the audience, and the judges' scores are revealed to the corners. It's up to the corners if they reveal it to the fighters. But the fighters, in essence, can't look up and see a scoreboard. So it's open live scoring for everyone but the fighters. But the fighters can be told. It all depends on what the corner chooses. What did you think of that?
If you're gonna do it, I guess that's probably the best way to do it. But I'm still not really a fan of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I scored Zapatella round one for her because I liked the wrestling that she had. She also had a nice standing guillotine attempt. And even though she lost the later part of the round, I gave her a score. And then when I saw the judges' scores right away, I thought, well, that was immediate feedback for me that I enjoyed as a fan. Actually, two of the judges disagreed with me, and they had it for Del Boni, but one agreed and had it for Zapatella. But it kind of engaged me, you know, to kind of see, like, am I on their wavelength or not? We know that they're not on each other's wavelength. But it kind of made it compelling for the fight. Now, there is that worst-case scenario of somebody knows they're down 3 rounds to nothing or whatever, and so that person could elect to not engage and run and just get out of there with a decision. But so far, I guess I haven't seen that in play as much as I thought that I might.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is fun. I think if you did it more consistently, well, I guess at the end of the day, it wouldn't matter. But if you're going to do it, I think that's the way to do it. But like I said, man, I know there's something about a little bit of human error and then just a little bit of I'm not a fan of those situations where, you know, a fighter, when they know they're up, you know exactly what they're going to do, you know, and that's going to change the complexity of the fight.
Agreed. All right. Well, folks, thank you again for always your support. And I hope you enjoyed the two guests that we had. Thank you again to Andrew Simon. Check out his role on Undercover Boss this Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. And thank you to Brandon Moreno, who's going to be on the co-main event at UFC 270 on January 22nd. Again, Goz and I will be doing a watch-along that night. So tune in. We will be here just like we always are, watching the fights along with you. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We got the UFC Fight Night this Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern start time for that main card. And then, of course, we'll be here on Sunday night, Monday morning to recap it for you. In the meantime, go out there, as always, and be a champion.